This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Yehiye Suwuhib in Washington. Here is what's coming up on Africa News Tonight.
It is really disturbing to see that government is coming with this measure at this particular point in time. This decision is not well taken into consideration.
That is the head of Transparency International in Nigeria on the increase of petrol price at the pump by 16% in the country. Details coming up also. Kenya has announced a phased reopening of the country from coronavirus-induced lockdown. And in Ethiopia, five senior members of the Oromo Liberation Front were seized by security forces in the capital Addis Ababa. All these and more ahead on Africa News Tonight. But first, our top story. In a global pandemic, refugees are among the most vulnerable people in the world. They often are forced to live in densely populated spaces and lack access to clean drinking water or soap. But how are refugees and internally displaced people coping during this difficult time? To help us understand the challenges faced by refugees and humanitarian workers trying to reach them, VOA Salem Salamon has the story.
Sick or healthy, young or old, 1% of the global population have been pushed out of a place they call home in search of a safe haven. About 80 million people in the world today have sought refuge or have been internally displaced, according to the United Nations. And this flow of refugees isn't slowing down. 10 million of them found themselves in this predicament in the last year alone.
We pledge to do everything in our power to end the conflict and persecution that drive these appalling numbers.
Millions have a second layer of vulnerability added this year due to a global pandemic that spreads quickly among people who live in close proximity to one another.
And many of them live in very crowded settlements, either in formal refugee camps or informal settlements, where there is very limited access to water, for one, but all of the kinds of precautions that we're reading about as best practice in terms of avoiding a contamination, self-isolation, frequent hand washing, these are not necessarily always available.
The outbreak is also preventing humanitarian workers from reaching vulnerable populations. Borders are closed and international travel has slowed to nearly a standstill.
We really are hamstrung ourselves. We're stuck at home, we're stuck in airports, we have our things that we're intending to deliver, and this can be soap, food, blankets, the sort of infrastructure associated with getting more water into facilities, pipes and pumps and all these sorts of things.
In West Africa, 50 million people are threatened by hunger due to conflict, climate change and rising food prices. The humanitarian group Care West Africa says the coronavirus outbreak is exacerbating this dire situation and making it hard for aid workers to reach the most vulnerable people.
So these people, they live on humanitarian assistance or support from their host communities. Currently, with restrictions, humanitarian actors have limited access to this population. So there is a challenge for them to ensure their daily needs. So if nothing is done for such population, in the coming months, we will have assessed more than 50 million of them in food insecurity and food crisis.
And even when aid workers do have access to the population, many are forbidden from congregating to receive aid.
And when we talk about humanitarian assistance, it implies many times gathering people for either food distribution or for sexual and reproductive health support, etc. So these activities cannot be undertaken as initially planned. It delays or it takes longer.
As countries restrict travel and close borders, those who work closest with refugees ask leaders to be compassionate and remember that not all people cross borders because they want to. For some, they have no other choice.
We always feel that people should have the right to seek a safer life, and there are justifiable reasons why people are crossing borders. But against that, there is also the reality that the movement of people in itself is a risk linked to how the virus spreads. The challenge is about ensuring that when responses are put in place by governments, many of these responses are completely understandable. but that they take into consideration the reasons why people are fleeing, and they consider and they continue to be imposed with sort of humanitarian principles in mind.
Even if refugees take much needed precautions against the coronavirus, they still remain vulnerable due to circumstances they can't control. Salem Solomon, VOA News, Washington.
In Ethiopia, security forces arrested 5 senior members from the Oromo Liberation Front, OLF, in the capital Addis Ababa following violence in the country last week that claimed at least 166 lives. The chairman of OLF, Dawit Ipsa, told the French news agency AFP he did not know why the senior members were taken into custody. Protests broke out in Addis Ababa and the surrounding Oromo region last week following the fatal shooting of popular musician Huchala Hondessa, whose songs channeled marginalization among his Oromo ethnic group, Ethiopia's largest. The situation in the capital, according to AFP, has been calm since Friday, though a nationwide internet blackout stretched into the seventh day today. The OLF is not the only party targeted in recent days. Last week, officials also detained Jawar Mohammed and Bakala Garba from the Oromo Federalist Congress, as well as Iskender Nagga, a longtime government critic who has recently spoken out against government policies that he argues favors Oromos. Nigeria's government has made a major increase in the pump price of petrol in the country. Critics say it will worsen the economy, which already had been devastated by efforts to limit the spread of COVID-19. Gifta Gariga from Abuja takes a look at the implications of this increase.
Last week, Nigerians saw a 16% jump in pump prices for gasoline to 140 naira 80 kobo a litre, or about 36 US cents. And while Musa Rafsanjani is the head of Transparency International in Nigeria, he says the timing for the increase was wrong because of the weak economy.
But it is really disturbing to see that government is coming with these measures at this particular point in time. This decision is not well taken into consideration.
The chairperson of the Nigeria Labour Congress in Abuja, Abubakar Alhassan Yakubu, also expressed regret about the government's decision.
It's quite unfortunate that the government in this era of COVID-19 pandemic, where Nigerians are living in abject poverty, workers are being sacked, people are losing jobs, the economy is nosediving. This is wicked. This is uncalled for.
The Nigeria Petroleum Products Pricing Regulatory Agency said the increase reflects the global rise in the price of crude oil to around $40 a barrel from less than $30 over a month ago. Uche Igwe, a political economist, said the solution to these frequent increases in the price of petrol in Nigeria would be to pass proposed legislation on the petroleum industry.
When the petroleum industry bill is passed, there will be efficiency. It will definitely make investment in downstream more attractive. And if investors invest in downstream, there will be the right competition. And I think that competition will force the prices to go lower.
Nii Akinsuju is the chairman of the Buhari Media Organization, a group of supporters of President Muhammadu Buhari. He also says the increase in the price of petrol goes along with the price of crude oil in the international market.
The government of President Buhari is very concerned with the well-being of Nigerians, and a number of policies and programs are being put in place to find a way of mitigating the negative impact of the coronavirus.
In March, Nigerian's government said that the pump price of petrol will be determined by market forces, largely determined by the international prices of crude oil. Nigeria has recently begun easing its restrictions on domestic and international travel, which were imposed in March to contain the spread of COVID-19. The restriction have forced millions of people out of their jobs and caught commerce sharply. The country has recorded at least 28,000 coronavirus cases and more than 600 deaths. For VOA News, this is Gift Agiriga from Abuja, Nigeria.
Kenya has announced a phased reopening from its coronavirus-induced lockdown, lifting restrictions and travel in and out of the capital Nairobi and the coastal city of Mombasa. Kenya's President Uhuru Kenyatta announced resumption of international flights starting August 1st. The phased reopening will also lift internal travel restrictions in the country. Kenyatta said places of worship can open but are limited to a maximum of 100 people inside, with events not lasting more than 1 hour. Congregants must be between ages 13 to 58 and have no underlying medical conditions. However, the president warned today the restrictions on travel and public gatherings could be reimposed if the coronavirus gets out of control. In Nairobi's Kibera neighborhood, those who depend on day-to-day wages have been hit hardest by the economic impact of the coronavirus pandemic. While Kenya's government is providing some support, a local charity has formed to pick up the slack. The Adopt a Family campaign connects well-off Kenyan families with those less fortunate. So far, the initiative has connected more than 400 families, providing relief to many in desperate need. Rahel Ambor reports from Nairobi.
3 months ago, 43-year-old Annette Okumu, a mother of six, was running a cake-making business on a busy street in Nairobi, and her husband had regular work as a painter. Then, Kenya's Minister of Health announced the country's first coronavirus case. Less than a week later, no one was buying cakes from Okumu, and her husband stopped getting jobs. Okumu's child, born with sickle cell anemia, started to get sick after several days of not taking medication.
At this time, there's no food, there's no breakfast, no lunch, no supper. For 2 days, I wondered, what next? Am I going to lose my kid? So when I saw Adopt a Family, it was late at night through social media. That is when I decided, enough is enough, let me speak out.
Annette called the number on the Adopt a Family Facebook page. Moses Omondi picked up the late-night call and asked Annette to meet him the next day. Omondi says he started Adopt a Family after the Kenyan government issued a stay-at-home order in March.
It led to many of the employees, you know, closing shop in order to adhere to the directives. In the process, there are people who are relying from hand to mouth, these two manual laborers and staff. Most of them lost their jobs. I sat and thought, what can I do that can adhere to the government directives? That's when I thought, why don't I look for families who can support a family?
On the night that Annette Okumu made the call to Omondi, Joe Bitange, a video editor in Nairobi, was online reading about the Adopt a Family initiative. Bitange reached out to Omondi the following morning and was connected with Annette Okumu. Soon, Okumu's family had their first meal in 2 days.
I decided to support one family by giving them a voucher. And he told me that the voucher that I gave him was actually supposed to support a family, to feed the family for 1 week. Yeah, so come the second week, I also gave him another voucher. And very many people now came in because they knew I was part of the program, because I was among the first people who joined his team.
In less than 3 months, the initiative has connected 460 families from the slum to another 460 families who give them financial support. In early March, following a stampede in Kibera that killed 2 people, the government said it would pilot a cash transfer program to help the most vulnerable members of society buy food during the COVID-19 pandemic. Many Kibera residents say they have not received that cash, however. Government representatives in Kibera say they are doing their best to help the needy during this time, and that personal initiatives such as Omondi's are important in filling gaps. Nehemiah Amocha is the assistant chief of Gatwekera location in Kibera.
And the government also came up with the vulnerable persons in the community who get some support from the government itself, the aged, the orphans, the widows, and others, the bedridden. So far, the government has done very well. But you see, you cannot do it alone. You need partners. And this is why we say the likes of Omondi are the best in the world.
Apart from direct money transfers, Adopt-A-Family conducts food distribution drives for needy families. They also run a feeding program for children in the slum, where Annette now volunteers her time cooking. Rael Umbor for VOA News, Nairobi.
The May 25th strangulation death of George Floyd while in police custody sparked an outpouring of protest demonstrations against racism and police brutality throughout the United States. Some African immigrants say they experience discrimination based on ethnic group or religion in their home countries, but not prejudice based on their skin color alone, as African Americans do. VOA's Adam Phillips spoke with several Africans about what it means to them to be black Africans living in the United States.
Aminu Kujunju directs a small nonprofit foundation in New York City. When she first arrived in the U.S. from the Democratic Republic of the Congo 20 years ago, she hadn't experienced color-based racism, but now she has. She says African Americans and African immigrants in the U.S. face different options. Many Africans can go back home. African Americans are here to stay.
The common denominator is that if you're black in this country, you're going to face racism, prejudice, and you're going to have to work very hard to put them aside in order to just forge forward.
Sudan-born social worker Huda Ibrahim speaks of everyday microaggressions black Americans must contend with from white Americans.
Microaggressions are an everyday racist practice that we face as Africans, as black people, as people of color in this country, about basically who we are, whether it's in the classroom, workplace, public transportation, whether you're just at a park trying to enjoy your day. These practices, they happen so much, questioning things that I achieved in life and did I get any help or did I deserve these things that I have? And I think if you're not careful enough, it causes a lot of insecurity, just feeling out of place constantly.
Before he became a grants and finance manager at a nonprofit institute, Tanzania-born Nathan Chiumi worked on Wall Street. He says that pay raises and promotions were often given to lesser qualified whites instead.
Obviously, that really didn't sit well with me, and it was definitely a race thing. And most of the time, it's very hard for us to confront it head on. So a lot of time, you just persevere and you endure it. But it doesn't mean that it makes you happy. Quite frustrating experience to live through.
But being black can put one's life, not just one's livelihood, in danger. Chiumi recalls the fear he felt in his apartment complex in the southern state of Florida, where a so-called Stand Your Ground law allows citizens to use lethal force against anyone they perceive to be a threat.
And so you're always afraid, what if one day I come into my house and I'm confronted by a neighbor who is a racist? They could just, you know, kill you right there, and that's going to be the end of you. These are all things that I had to really learn and adjust as a black person living in America.
Chiumi says he's also fearful of police violence.
And it doesn't matter whether I'm a decent human being. It doesn't matter that I have no history of crime. It doesn't matter that I'm, you know, well-educated. As long as you encounter bad police who can act irrationally, just take away your life. It's always hard to talk about this, really hard to even think about these things, because they just bring a lot of emotional rage.
Even so, he says, African immigrants feel divided in their attitudes towards the United States overall.
In one way, we admire the American dream, but on the other hand, we know our life can be taken away from us at any moment. We walk in a life which is full of optimism, but at the same time, you're scared for yourself and for your loved ones and for the children that you have to raise.
Davina Buratara, a Kenyan social worker living in New Jersey, has been heartened by the wave of demonstrations and the mainstream reckoning over racial justice they have led to. Still, she worries.
Will all this energy and all this protest really amount to actual change? Will people really be able to walk freely, live freely as equal Americans or citizens in this country? Will the change actually occur, and will we see it and experience it?
Those continue to be open questions. However, for now at least, the reality of racism and the pain and anger it engenders is laid bare for all Americans to see. Adam Phillips, VOA News, New York.
Despite churches in Nigeria emerging from lockdown to once again holding weddings, they're trying to cut down on the number of guests. The ongoing coronavirus pandemic has led many couples to get married online through video conferencing platforms, but Nigeria's large wedding industry, which is geared towards entertaining large numbers of guests, is struggling to adjust to the new reality. Timothy Abiesu reports from Abuja.
Excitement in the air as newly married Matthew and Peace Udokomusi march out of the church auditorium of the Family Worship Center in Abuja City. The wedding, initially scheduled for April, was held 2 months later under strict COVID-19 guidelines, say the couple.
My family is very large. I have my elder sisters in Lagos, my all of them. Those they can't come. Those in Lagos don't come. My two sisters in Abuja, she couldn't come presently. It would have been so big.
I have told myself I was going to entertain the public with dance. And in fact, that is the only thing I am regretting. Because there is no music, there is nothing.
Most Nigerian churches reopened earlier this month after authorities lifted the ban on religious gatherings. But most churches are treading carefully. During Peace and Matthew's wedding, only 15 people, including the couple and officiating pastors, were allowed into the 3,500 capacity church auditorium. Guests, including family members and friends, witnessed the occasion streaming online from their homes, with some, such as Dennis Dogo, just outside the church premises.
From the gate, we were stopped. But while outside, we connected via online. There was a live Facebook program going on, which we viewed the wedding from outside. So basically, we were not totally disconnected.
The wedding industry is big business in Nigeria, but the coronavirus pandemic is changing how companies within the industry operate. Event planners such as Victor Nyekwiri say the pandemic impacted their revenues.
It has been tough for us, especially the event industry, because we are the first set of people that it hit. Because first thing first, no event. There is a total ban on events. That's the first thing that happened. And that being, you know, with that, it put a stop to all activities with respect to events. So everybody in the event industry right now is going through a lot.
To get ahead of the situation, Victor and his team at V's Events planned what was popularly known as Nigeria's first online wedding. The success of the online wedding was a catalyst for many couples whose wedding plans had been stalled by the pandemic, even though Victor says things are not the same.
Business is not as usual. It's different now. Truth be told, we can't wait for things to go back to normal. Planning its own wedding, it has its own side, you know. And it has definitely have to be with small guest size. And the truth is, you can't have that real, you know, feeling when you are planning a real wedding with everybody on ground, you're seeing, you know, everybody there.
The good thing about online weddings, says Victor, is that it gives an option for couples to get married and move ahead with their lives. Timothy Obiezu for VOA News, Abuja.
And that wraps up this edition of Africa News Tonight. I'm Yehi Suhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voanews.com. On behalf of our producer, Mokbili Aparo, thanks again for tuning in and choosing the Voice of America.
Hey, sports fans, brighten your day by tuning into the Sunny Side of Sports Monday through Friday at 16:30 and 18:30 UTC. Join us on Facebook at facebook.com/VOA Sunny and on Twitter at VOA Sunny Sports. Or check out the blog at blogs.voanews.com/Sunny. It's the Sunny Side of Sports right here on the Voice of America.